snowflake, Carolina snowflake. Carolina snowflake, Carolina snowflake.
I'm Amanda.
I'm Jason. I'm Jason. Underwear pervert.
I'm an
underwear pervert. And we're back with another episode of the Carolina Snowflakes podcast. We're your hosts.
I'm Amanda.
And I'm Jason. And this week is a special week on the Carolina Snowflakes podcast because we're doing another reverse, a role reversal, another reverse episode where our gorgeous and beautiful co-host Amanda will tell me a story that I don't know about, which is reverse from how we would normally do it.
Mm-hmm.
Hooray. And so I think this week we're going to be doing that, and it's going to be interesting. And we just got done doing, you know, more of our Republican shitbag series on Phyllis Schlafly. And I just have to say, I dreamed about her. I watched way too many hours of Phyllis Schlafly talking, and I needed to switch it up a little bit. So this week we're doing a completely different topic, and I don't even know what it is, and Amanda has brought it here. So I guess I'm going to just give the floor to you and let you dive right in and take over. So
okay, well, first a disclaimer, warning. We are recording this on Easter.
Oh, yeah.
Which, when you were living in the ass crack of Appalachia.
Ass crack of Appalachia.
The best way to celebrate Easter around here is to get together with your kinfolk and shoot loud, large guns.
Shoot guns. Bang, bang. Here you go, Jesus.
So if you hear any loud booms,
mm-hmm.
We're fine.
I think their plan is to shoot Jesus if he comes back.
They're like, oh, God, zombie Jesus.
That's all I can figure because they somehow associate he is risen with shooting guns.
Right.
And that's because of where we live. As you said, the ass crack of Appalachia.
Yeah. So if you hear it, that's what's happening.
If you hear any weird gun sounding sounds, that's what they are. They're guns. They're guns for Jesus, though. So
right.
Should make you feel a little bit better.
Guns.
I guess.
God. Glory.
Government.
Government.
And Trump.
Trump.
That starts with a T. It throws the whole thing off.
We'll have to name him Grump.
Good one.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
You ready?
I'm ready. I was born ready. I was born naked. I'm always ready.
God. This week, I want to talk about a normal guy doing normal things who, at the end of the day, could easily be any one of us.
Oh, so the exact opposite of Phyllis Schlafly.
Correct.
Awesome.
He isn't a celebrity, a rock star, a billionaire, or a politician.
Well, what?
I know.
What is there to say?
He's just a guy.
Just a guy.
A guy with a story to tell who wound up dead. Uh-oh. Possibly as a result of that story.
Oh, so this is like some conspiracy. Like, did he get whacked? Did he fall out a window? Oh. I don't know. Let's stay tuned to find out.
His name is John Barnett.
Uh-huh.
On March 9th, 2024, John Barnett was found dead inside a pickup truck in the parking lot of a motel in Charleston, South Carolina.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wait a minute. This was like a few weeks ago.
Yes, this just happened.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Law enforcement has said his death appears to be the result of a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. He was found slumped forward in the driver's seat with a silver handgun in his right hand, his pointer finger still on the trigger, and a note on the passenger seat. The contents of the note have not been shared publicly as of today, and his death is still under investigation.
Huh. Okay. Well, I really want to know what it says in the note.
Yeah. John was staying at the hotel in Charleston while he was in town giving testimony for deposition in a whistleblower lawsuit against airplane manufacturer Boeing.
Boeing.
He had already undergone 2 full days of testimony, and according to his attorneys, John seemed in good spirits and was pleased with how the case was progressing. It was the first time in a number of years where he was sharing his story and finally being heard by Boeing through their attorneys, by the public through media, and by the justice system.
Oh, shit.
So to say his death came as a shock is an understatement. No one saw it coming.
So he's a whistleblower.
Yes.
Oh, shit. Mm-hmm. So it's like a Snowden, but he gets murdered.
Maybe.
Well, here's the thing. This is where I did want to say, Charleston does have a big Boeing plant there. Mm-hmm. In fact, when I lived in Charleston, they were doing construction on one of the overpasses in order to like allow the giant wing parts to go through, and they had to expand the size of the interstate. And for like the 6 years I was living in Charleston, they were doing construction there for Boeing. Mm-hmm. And like, it's kind of a big deal when that plant came down there. So I have some personal experience with Charleston, South Carolina, and Boeing being an important thing there.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that too.
Yeah, it's a
yeah, it's a big deal.
It caused them to be doing construction on the fucking exit for like 6 years, and it was really frustrating.
Mm-hmm. In fact, in the days following his death, multiple people, including former coworkers and at least one friend, have said his apparent suicide simply doesn't make sense.
Mm.
A friend of John's named Jennifer shared a conversation she allegedly had with him shortly before he arrived in Charleston for the deposition. According to Jennifer, she asked John if he was scared to go to court and to be face-to-face with Boeing's representatives. She said John told her he wasn't scared, but that if he ended up dead, he wanted her to know it wasn't suicide.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wow, like a John McAfee situation. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't commit suicide, whatever. That's what happened with John McAfee. And he even wrote whacked on his arm in a tattoo.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Former coworkers have also shared similar accounts, but unfortunately all have requested to remain anonymous or have given fictitious names to the media. In the world of journalism and news media, anonymity can greatly undermine the validity of a story.
Yeah.
However, it can also indicate a very real threat of danger if one were to openly identify themselves.
Right. Yeah. I was just thinking of Snowden. He had to be anonymous for a while, too. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of one of those things, like it's a whistleblower thing.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So in the case of John's friend and his former coworkers, it's difficult to know which is which, but either way, it's worth noting.
Hmm.
It's also worth noting that John Barnett isn't the first whistleblower in Boeing's manufacturing history, nor is this the first time Boeing has been marred by legal troubles. In fact, in the last few years, Boeing has faced a litany of allegations followed by investigations from federal agencies.
Yeah.
Boeing has been spanked by the FAA, the Department of Labor, OSHA, and even the United States Senate for issues surrounding safety mishaps.
Yeah, didn't they have that plane that like crashed itself into the ground on purpose?
Yes.
They had
two of those, actually.
Yeah, oh, great.
Yeah. Now, here is where I have to give a disclaimer. In properly telling John's story, I will be talking at least a little bit about airplanes and how they are made.
Airplanes.
However, I'm not an airplane engineer.
Nope.
Truthfully, I don't really understand how airplanes are even real or how they fly.
Me either. It's magic.
So if I mess up terminology or if it seems like I'm not an expert, please don't come at me.
My dad has a little bit of experience with aeronautics, but I don't think he would know much more than about the engines.
Yeah,
he knows how the engines work, and that's about it.
I don't know.
I think it's compartmentalized like that. I don't think there are that many people that understand the whole plane. I think it's like people understand pieces.
Yeah.
And then there's a couple of people that understand the whole thing.
We get into this story, I think you'll be like, yeah, that's how it happens.
I think that is how it happens. I don't know if that's smart or not, but that seems to be the way that it works.
John Barnett was a 32-year employee of Boeing Airplane Manufacturing.
Wow.
25 of his 32 years were spent at Boeing's Washington State facility mm-hmm. in Everett, Washington.
Yeah, that's the big one.
Mm-hmm. It's a massive facility and yeah. where, to this day, the bulk of Boeing's airplanes are assembled and where production is finalized before the planes are delivered to their respective buyers.
So, I don't know if you got this coming or you know the answer to this. So, it seemed to me like that was the spot where they like actually put the big ass things together. Like they built the pieces in other places and then shipped them there and mm-hmm. then put it, like that's where it got put together into a plane.
Yes.
Yeah. That was my understanding.
Yes. Huh.
See, I know a little bit about this topic. Even
look
before
at you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. It should be noted that the majority of the Everett facility's employees are union members,
yeah.
and the reputation of the facility has historically been positive. Management is said to run a tight ship where concerns in manufacturing and safety are quickly addressed and problems resolved. John worked as a quality control engineer.
Oh.
His job was to review, monitor, and study the production of airplanes to ensure Boeing's manufacturing rules were being followed, materials were handled properly, and components met installation and functional requirements.
Hmm.
By all accounts, he was very good at his job, and he excelled in the role.
Did they do the thing like what they do with underwear where it says like this was piece was inspected by and then it has like a name, like a little tag?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But kind of.
Yeah.
I mean, they had probably to sign. There was lots of paperwork.
Yeah, probably. I'm sure. Oh, God. I can't even imagine.
It came as no surprise to anyone at the Everett facility when in 2010, John was promoted to quality control manager and was transferred to the Boeing manufacturing facility in Charleston, South Carolina, to oversee the final assembly and finishing processes of Boeing's new 787 Dreamliner.
Mm-hmm.
At this point in the story, there are a couple of things we need to go over in order to better understand the situation John was entering when he arrived in Charleston.
Let me just say also the name Dreamliner is a little weird. It sounds like rubber sheets you would wear to stop from pissing yourself. That's just where my brain goes when I hear Dreamliner.
Could you pick up some Dreamliners
for me? Or like
in
case you have nocturnal emissions.
What? Rubber sheets.
Yeah. So
Dreamliners.
But it's not that.
That's right. Yes. The first thing to note is that the Boeing plant in Charleston is located on a shared-use facility operated by the Charleston Air Force Base.
Yeah, yeah.
It is also the location of the Charleston International Airport.
Mm-hmm.
It's much smaller in size than the Everett, Washington facility, and unlike Everett's workforce, there are no unionized workers.
Yeah, because of South Carolina, baby.
In fact, like North Carolina,
mm-hmm.
South Carolina is and historically has been anti-union.
Oh, yeah, but they call it right to work, which is hilarious.
Yeah, oh, yes.
But it means anti-union.
Also, unlike Everett, the Charleston facility was tightly interwoven with the military.
Yeah.
John himself talked about the atmosphere and work culture being different from Everett due to the influence of military-minded management.
That's an alliteration.
Uh-huh.
Well, it's interesting. You do have to go through like the base area there to get to where they work. Actually, it's pretty crazy. It is. It's all, like the airport, the Air Force, and Boeing are all kind of in one little section there in Charleston.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. All together.
Yeah.
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 He said there was a pervasive tone of don't ask, don't tell, don't report, and an acceptance of retaliation against those who did ask or told or reported.
Yeah, if any of those planes were gay, we are not going to talk about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know what I meant. The second thing to note is the production history of the 787 Dreamliner. The 787 was originally designed in the early 2000s and marketed to airlines and other potential buyers as a cost-saving jumbo jet.
All right.
It's considered a wide-body commercial airplane, meaning it's designed to carry a lot of passengers,
yeah,
and is wide enough to accommodate up to three rows of three seats.
Ooh, that's
or
a big plane.
Or 9 seats wide with 2 aisles running parallel.
Ooh, I've never been on a plane that big.
They built it to be a competitor to the Airbus.
Yeah, yeah. I've never been on a plane that big. I don't know what that's like. It seems
pretty
nuts.
Depending on seat styles and arrangements, the 787 can accommodate between 240 and 300 passengers.
Wow.
And was designed primarily for super long-haul flights.
Yeah, that would be like a across-the-ocean flight.
Yeah,
thing.
Like
yeah.
Australia to Europe.
Yeah.
America to somewhere far away.
I've never got to go somewhere cool like that, so I've never been on a plane like that. That sounds awesome.
They're big.
Yeah.
The 787 Dreamliner is the source of several firsts for Boeing production. For example, it's the first commercial airliner to have the fuselage, the main body of the plane, as well as the wings made almost entirely out of carbon composite.
Oh, wow.
As opposed to standard airplane materials like aluminum, titanium, and steel.
Yeah.
Due to the use of lighter composite materials in production, Boeing marketed the 787 as being up to 20% more fuel efficient than other wide-body passenger planes and amassed a long list of buyers years before the model ever reached final production.
Yeah, that's so weird. this is where the difference between airplanes and say cars come into play, where it's like, I don't know how that works with planes. Like, they unveil some blueprints and then they're like, oh, by the way, this is going to be available in 20 years. Go ahead and pre-order some. Like, that's so different. It's hard to even understand how that
From what I read, and kind of, cause this is all new to me too.
Yeah.
Yes. They put pre-orders in.
Yeah.
Years ahead.
So how well your plane does is based on like how well your blueprints are and like the promises you can make. It seems almost like it's merging with big tech, which I think is a thing that's happening with airlines. And like they're doing, it's just like with Elizabeth Holmes, right? They're making the same mistake over and over again that they make in tech, where you're allowed to promise big things that don't necessarily come true. And it doesn't matter if it's software or if it's something on your phone, but when it's a fucking airplane or
that matters,
or blood that you're using to test for diseases, then it matters. And like that style of being able to lie your way, fake it till you make it, like, it shouldn't be in those arenas where it comes to airplanes and blood tests, but they will end up doing the same thing. And it's I think it's just capitalism.
Bingo.
Yeah.
The 787 also differs significantly from previous Boeing models in the overhaul and redesign of the electrical system. It's the first, quote, bleedless Boeing model.
Oh, okay.
Meaning rather than relying on compressed air for operating things like pressurization, hydraulics, brakes, and wing defrost, everything is done using electricity pulled from built-in lithium-ion batteries.
Oh, that... I mean, it seems like I'd be good to have both, in my mind. That's one of those, you need some redundancy built in there.
One but then or the that other would be seems, too heavy.
Yeah, yeah. One
they
or the
were
others.
Selling this plane as being massive but light.
Oh, man.
Yes, the batteries that have a tendency to explode and catch fire at random.
Yeah, those batteries.
The lithium-ion batteries. Mm-hmm. In fact, the FAA temporarily halted production of the 787 in 2013 due to several onboard mishaps, including electrical fires from the batteries.
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of common sense.
But this halt was only temporary and didn't slow Boeing's roll, nor did it deter buyers who saw potential for increased profitability by incorporating the more fuel-efficient model into their fleet.
Okay, so...
Fires, schmires.
Yeah, who cares?
It's fine.
It's fine.
We're going to save so much money.
Yeah, think about how cheap the gas is going to be. That's so American right there.
When the 787 first entered production in 2003, Boeing announced that unlike other models, the Dreamliner's critical components would primarily be built by subcontractors, and then those components would be assembled for completion in the Everett, Washington facility. Boeing outsourced almost everything. The wings were made in Japan, the body was built in Italy, the passenger doors and wiring were assembled in France, the cargo doors were built in Sweden, the software components were assembled in India, and everything else came from contractors in South Korea and the United States.
Oh.
Okay.
That seems like a really bad idea.
It was.
Yeah, well, first of all, only one of those places uses not the metric system, and that's us. So that seems like we would get the parts in and they'd be like, millimeters, what the fuck are those?
Millimeters? Well, just...
Put it in American or I can't do it.
Just wait.
Okay.
Although the use of subcontractors was intended to be a means of cost cutting in the overall production of the 787, the decision ultimately came back to bite Boeing on the ass. Production of the Dreamliner faced delay after delay. Unlike previous models, Boeing opted not to provide detailed specifications to their partners and suppliers. Instead, for the 787, they provided broad-level specifications only, on the assumption that their subcontractors were competent enough to perform the design and integration of vital components with only limited information.
What? What?
Yeah, so they sent this design out into the world to these subcontractors all over the place and didn't provide
They don't even really know what they're doing.
Specifications. They were like, you're smart, you figure it out, make it look like this.
It's like a wing. you know?
Yeah, just
goes on the
like,
side of a plane like a
like
wing.
It's like a wing.
All wings are kind of the same, really. It's really how you want to do it. Whatever strikes you, how do you feel?
Yeah.
Let your emotions guide how you build this wing to a goddamn airplane that's going to carry 300 people at a time.
I know.
Wow.
When I read about that, I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. They thought they were going to save money and cut costs, but Boeing wound up wasting many years and billions of dollars on delays in production of the 787 due to poor decision making.
I mean, imagine how much of a nightmare it would be just to arrange a Zoom call where you had someone from all those countries on at one time. That would be almost impossible and take forever. And that's just to get a fucking Zoom call going, let alone building a thing that's going to fly in the sky
with
with people in it against gravity.
It wasn't until 2011 that Boeing officially completed the assembly and delivered the first 787 to an airline in Japan.
Wow.
So they started building that thing in 2003.
And they were like, give it to the Japanese first in case, you know.
Well,
they don't weigh as much. There's less of them.
I like your thinking.
Yeah, it was
way
racist.
Funnier.
Yeah.
But no, they had some kind of deal with Japan.
Okay.
Japan made the wings.
So they were like, they're going to go with the wings, guys. Okay, sure.
In the years leading up to that first delivery, the assembly portion of the 787 took place at Boeing's facility in Everett, Washington. As I mentioned earlier, Everett had a reputation for being thorough and fastidious in following proper procedures during assembly and production. And, well, this also led to a great deal of delay and lost revenue.
Yeah, and they blamed it on the unions.
Of course they did.
Yeah, assholes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In an effort to, quote, consolidate the production of the 787, Boeing's terminology, not mine, Boeing shuttered assembly in Everett and relocated the production facility to Charleston, South Carolina. John Barnett was a part of that relocation effort, and he was also sent to Charleston. In his 7 years as quality control manager at the Charleston facility from 2010 to 2017, John noted and reported several concerns and outright failures he witnessed during the assembly process of the 787.
And he reported them up the chain of command first?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
His reports to management, however, were not well received.
Yeah, okay.
Not only was he pressured to not document defects, he was actually demoted at one point for using email to relay problems he identified to management. Management stated he should have shared the report face to face rather than through email, i.e. not in writing.
Wow. So it's the same thing as Snowden. It's literally Snowden again, except with Snowden it was the government. But I think a lot of government people end up working at Boeing and they just do the same shit there.
Management also stated that John needed to better learn how to operate in the, quote, gray areas of production and assembly.
Yeah, learn to live in the gray area, bud. Plausible deniability, that's all you need.
During his time at the Charleston facility, John reported a series of events involving missing defective components. Parts that were sent for assembly, but for various reasons were deemed too defective to use.
And then they ended up missing because they fucking used them.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
Boeing's policy stated that these parts were to be labeled, stored, and tracked by quality control to ensure they would not be accidentally used during assembly. John was deeply concerned that management was knowingly using the defective parts during assembly, and he claimed in 2016 he witnessed a senior manager intentionally install a defective dented hydraulic tube into a plane. He also claimed that management routinely pressured him to lie on paperwork to Boeing regarding missing parts and where they allegedly ended up.
Wow. So they're like, you're quality control. We only have you so we can say we have you. We don't care what you have to
say.
You're
just a warm body.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my God.
As a side note, in 2021, the FAA investigation into the missing defective parts discovered over 400 defective parts were unaccounted for.
Yeah. Whatever happened to those parachutes that just explode? We had those parachutes. They just randomly explode. I don't know where those ended up.
Where'd those go?
Yeah.
The ones with all the tears in them.
Yeah. Yeah.
John claimed that not only were defective parts being used during assembly, but management knew about it and encouraged it in order to speed up production and the sale of the Dreamliner. In his reviews of production, John also discovered clusters of metal shavings left near and within electrical systems for flight controls.
Oh.
If sharp metal shavings encounter electrical wiring, the results can be catastrophic.
Yeah.
John repeatedly urged his bosses to take action regarding the shavings, but instead they chose to relocate him to a different part of the assembly line.
Yeah, move him.
By the way, the FAA would later issue a directive mandating the removal of metal shavings prior to delivery of the airplanes.
Oh, wow. So they were going to just deliver them with the metal shavings? Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
In 2017, John led a quality control review of the oxygen systems used in the 787 during emergencies. This is the system that delivers oxygen through the masks that drop down over seats when cabin pressure suddenly drops. During the review, he discovered that 25% of the 300 cylinders failed to deliver oxygen to the dropped mask.
Instead, they had peanut butter. No. It was delicious, but you can't breathe it.
No, they delivered nothing.
Oh, okay. Just nothing? Just...
Yep.
Would have been better if they were peanut butter.
Although it's not a common occurrence, pressure drops can and do happen. In a Dreamliner full of 300 passengers, a 25% failure rate in the oxygen system would mean 75 people could potentially die from suffocation.
Oh.
John immediately reported his findings to management, and they couldn't wait to take action. Just kidding.
Yeah.
They did nothing.
They were like, eh, it's a quarter of
them. Literally nothing.
Wow.
This proved to be the straw that broke the camel's back. It was at this point that John took his report and his years of documented shortcomings directly to the FAA. He became a whistleblower. It was also at this point that a routine doctor visit would change the course of his career. The stress and concern that John carried as a result of years of abuse and gaslighting at the hands of Boeing's management had caused significant damage to his health.
Oh, so he was like... so stressed out about knowing all this shit and no one listening to him, it actually hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
But he kept working. Oh, America.
He was battling depression,
yeah.
PTSD, anxiety, and nightmares. Eventually, his doctor had the come to Jesus talk to it with him and was like, dude, you're going to have a heart attack or a stroke out if you don't remove the stress from your life.
Wow.
So in 2017, around the time he contacted the FAA, John Barnett retired from Boeing after 32 years of employment.
Huh.
2 years later, in 2019, John officially went public with his story and gave detailed accounts of Boeing's malpractice to the New York Times and the BBC.
Oh.
His accounts garnered significant attention, and in 2022, John became the subject of a Netflix documentary called Downfall, The Case Against Boeing.
I never watched that.
Mm-mm. When John filed his complaint with the FAA in 2017, he also formally filed a whistleblower complaint with OSHA seeking whistleblower protection.
Mm-hmm.
This led to a 4-year investigation from the FAA and OSHA, which culminated in several citations against Boeing in which they had to address and resolve reported problems, including halting production in 2020 and again in 2021.
Hmm.
But unfortunately for John, OSHA closed his whistleblower case in late 2020, which removed his protections as a whistleblower and resulted in the case landing favorably for Boeing.
Time to go to Russia.
At least in the legal sense.
Yes, we will take him.
John and his attorneys appealed the decision and launched a retaliation lawsuit against Boeing in 2021. The suit against Boeing alleges that the airline manufacturer and its management intentionally ignored John's repeated reports and, in an effort to silence him, retaliated by demoting him, transferring him to a different department, and pushing him to lie on paperwork.
Like, what is their argument that he's just lying?
What do you mean?
Like, what's their stance? Like, he's saying these things and they're not true. He's just a dick who lies about us and wants to hurt us?
No, they're saying things like, we were aware of the problem and we were addressing it.
Okay. It's just...
Very
I just don't understand.
Vague.
Like, yeah, like, I don't understand how you could oppose him and be like, yeah, he's totally, like, these are all real things, and we totally did fill half the oxygen mask with metal shavings, but in our defense, we had nowhere to put the metal shavings, and we had empty oxygen tanks. Come on.
What were we supposed to do?
Come on.
It just made sense.
Yeah, when something makes sense, it just makes sense.
The suit seeks damages for physical and mental distress suffered by John during his time as a Boeing employee.
See, it's just, it's got to be the money people. The money people were like, fuck you, we don't care.
Well, they're huge and they have so much money.
Yeah.
It was on the morning of day 3 of the deposition for this lawsuit that John was found dead in his pickup truck.
Wow.
His attorneys haven't said that they believe his death was the result of foul play, but they have requested a formal investigation given the circumstances of the case. The investigation into his death is still open and ongoing. Since his passing, John's family has stepped forward to resume the lawsuit and have stated they will continue pursuing justice for John and other Boeing employees under the name of John's estate.
I mean, even if he did kill himself, that's the right thing.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Boeing issued a one-sentence condolence to John's family for his unexpected death. It's likely they will now seek to have the case dismissed since the plaintiff is deceased, but it's possible the case will be allowed to continue under John's estate. We'll have to wait and see what happens.
Yeah, I don't know.
I felt this story should be shared because, in my opinion, John Barnett could easily be anyone.
Yeah.
He could be me. He could be you. He was a guy doing his job and doing it well, but was punished for it in the long run. And ultimately, one way or another, his employer and his sense of responsibility and strong work ethic led to his death.
Yeah.
Although John's story isn't directly related to the recent safety complaints and issues plaguing Boeing, it's a testament that these types of problems aren't recent developments.
Yeah, and that's why their doors just blow off or aren't there yeah. or what the fuck ever.
Boeing has been cutting corners for years, and even after getting spanked over and over, they continue to fall short. However, change and opportunity for improvement is possible, as literally this week, Boeing's CEO, Dave Calhoun, formally resigned.
Okay.
Boeing's commercial airline CEO, Dan Steele, also announced he's stepping down, and Boeing's chairman, Larry Kellner, has announced he will not seek re-election.
Dan Steele? Well, he could always do porn.
Dan Steele. There's an opportunity for change to happen here, and there's absolutely room for conversation revolving around the toxicity of corporate America, the capitalism it embodies, and how it places profit over health and safety.
Yeah.
By the way, as of 2024, production of the 787 Dreamliner has dwindled to almost nothing, despite having a backlog of over 700 orders.
Whoa.
Boeing has spent over $32 billion dollars
wow.
on this specific program since 2003 and have yet to break even.
Wow.
That's 32 billion with a B.
Oh man, that's my brain can't register that.
There are currently a little over 1,000 Dreamliners in use around the world, with the majority in the US and Japan. And the 787 has been involved in several accidents over the years, but thankfully none have resulted in fatalities.
Is that the one where it kept going down towards the ground on purpose when the pilots were fucking flying it? And they were like, sometimes it just decides to go straight down for a second and you can't stop it.
No, that was a 737 MAX.
Oh, okay.
The 787 is the one just like a week ago or a couple weeks ago where they hit turbulence.
And the door flew off?
No, that was also, I think, a 737.
Okay.
I believe.
Yeah.
I could be wrong on that one. The 787, they hit turbulence, and it turned out the pilot bumped the joystick, and it caused all the passengers to bump their heads, and like 12 of them had to go to the hospital with injuries.
Oh, wow.
Whoops.
That's a sensitive fucking joystick, man.
Whoops.
Wow. Yeah. What a story. I mean, I like that it revolves around a person. I think in this day and age, this like whole whistleblower thing, there's so much. I have a lot of thoughts about that whole thing in general, because you have the wackadoo conspiracy people who love whistleblowers. And that, mm-hmm. I mean, and some of the real crazy conspiracy channels that I watch. That's what they call them, like whistleblower shows. We're going to interview a guy who tells us that the government's really been fighting space aliens. You know what I mean? Like, it's so easy because you need to be anonymous. And people that are doing whistleblowing, some of them could be liars. And because they're anonymous, it makes it a lot easier to lie. So there's this whole gray area of whistleblowers that this falls into.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how to sort it out. Like, how do you decide when somebody's a whistleblower that, like, this is a real thing that we need to pay attention to and not just some kook who's trying to get attention? I don't know how you sort that out.
Well, in the case of John, he had to seek whistleblower protection, which was something, there was an act that was a congressional order from, I don't know, the 70s or something, where the FAA had protection through OSHA. If you applied and got coverage, then you were a whistleblower status with protection, but you had to apply.
Huh. Wow. That's very interesting. I mean, like Julian Assange, you could technically call him a whistleblower if you want to, but I mean, I don't. I'm just saying that whole area is a very interesting area.
Kind of. Yeah, I mean, it is. I just think about this story is enraging to me.
Yeah.
In part because this man spent 32 years with this company. He gave a significant part of his life.
Yeah.
And then lost his life.
Yeah.
And he had to battle them the last 8, 9, 10 years of his life.
Yeah.
And they got away with murder, essentially. Whether or not they actually literally physically killed him, they killed him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh no, I definitely know what you mean.
And
either way,
they're
the reason he's not alive.
Yeah, there weren't protections in place like there were in the other facility in Washington, where they had the union that theoretically could step in and intervene against management that was trying to get you to lie and stuff.
I would love to see the note to see if halfway through it turns into Courtney Love's handwriting.
Yeah, well, I mean, the note they still haven't released, and his family hasn't said anything about it because it's all under investigation.
Halfway through, it turns into pink ink with hearts over the eyes.
I mean, multiple attorneys have said, like, the contents of that note will either close this case as a suicide, or it could very well open it up into something else.
Right. Yeah. I mean, completely. Yeah. It depends on, like, is it his voice? Is it the way he's known to write? I mean, we do have, presumably this dude has written a lot. That they could compare it to. And we have, like, really good analysis now of writing to tell whether or not something was written by X person. Mm-hmm. We have all the AI in the world that can really look at that shit and tell you pretty concisely, like, this, or determinedly, like, this was written by this person or not.
Yeah.
Courtney Love wrote this one, just like she did with Kurt.
She just showed up in Charleston on the morning of March 9th
well,
and wrote this letter.
About somebody writing... okay, never mind. That's
no.
Just, yeah.
I'm just... Just from the employee-employer standpoint alone, it's just...
Oh, it's dirty.
Infuriating.
Yeah, it's completely fucked. I mean, it's like the downfall of capitalism. Like, the money is everything. The money is the bottom line. And, like, not considering people dying being a major thing.
And
it's all very
dark.
And
all of these, you know, I read that the country of Qatar...
Yeah.
They had ordered a few of the Dreamliners, and when the Charleston facility was getting just raked over the coals with all of the investigations in the FAA, they were like, we still want the plane, but we want the ones your people up in Everett to build it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did. They had to, like, move... the pieces to Washington State to have them assembled for the Qatar planes.
I mean, it's just interesting because, like, what's the major difference? The union.
It's the union.
Yeah. It seems so obvious, but I mean, I don't know. Trying to have the union fight in modern times is like talking to a brick wall. People just don't give a fuck. I've tried to argue with people about why unions are important and how we should have them, and people will just tune you the fuck out. Like, people don't want to hear it.
Well, I mean, a lot of that's because of where we're from. We just don't have a lot of day-to-day exposure to union workers and union life.
It's crazy.
I mean, it's just not a thing here.
Yeah.
I think I read something like North Carolina has less than 3%
It's crazy. Unionization. It's like teachers and that's it.
Yeah, it's next to nothing.
And some cops. Yeah.
Some, yeah. Not even all.
Yeah, right. It's some cops and some teachers.
Uh-huh.
Oh, man, that's terrible. Oh. Well, I don't want to get on a yelly spree and get angry. I was trying to enlighten, like, lighten the mood on all this.
Bring in some levity.
Yeah, I was trying to bring some jokes here, but in the end, it really is, like, it's pretty scary and, like, dangerous and, like, uncool. But
yeah, your employer will kill you if necessary.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we've kind of known that for a while.
Don't work yourself to death.
Don't do it. They're not worth dying over.
Mm-mm.
It's really not worth it. And if you work at Boeing, oh boy, good luck.
Call us. Send us an email.
Yeah, let us know if you work at Boeing and you got some shit to drop. This can become an investigative journalism podcast like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but as of right now, we're just a comedy podcast, and I was trying to make jokes.
Trying to be funny.
Yeah, peanut butter in the oxygen tanks. This is what I got. It would be a delicious and creamy death.
He died. Delicious, creamy death.
Well, next week on the Carolina Snowflakes podcast, my plan was to give myself another week to not do a Republican shitbag, and we were going to do another little experimental episode. This one's going to be an experimental bit I have where I dive into 4chan a little bit. So next week's going to be a 4chan episode, so you should be excited for that, because no one knows what the fuck is going to end up coming out of that. But... And then after that, I think we're going to get back to our roots of fucking with some Republicans. So that is coming. If that's what you came for, don't worry. We will shit on some Republicans very soon. I appreciate everybody listening. This was a great episode. You did an amazing job. I didn't know that story. It was good to hear. And I love everybody. Thanks for listening. We got a website you can check out, carolinasnowflakes.com. You can send us an email at our email, carolinasnowflakes@gmail.com. And... thank you for listening. Phyllis Schlafly sucks. Love you all.
Bye.